This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, travel companions and cold weather food.
You are not a $4,000 a month girl. You are a pay by the hour girl. You can make that in one day. Sleazy and unsafe and scary, but after a couple of weeks of that, and when I go back to like my dating life, they're astounded by my skills. Like, they're like, what? Like,
this girl. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So I want to get right to our first guest. This is luxury travel companion, Madison Montgomery. So when we talk about a travel companion, is this about travel or is this kind of code for something else?
It's code. A travel companion means that I am available to travel with you, to travel to you, or whatever, but as an escort.
So as an escort then, I'm assuming sex is involved.
Two consenting adults making their own decisions can have sex, yes.
How did you kind of get into this?
When I was 20 to 23, I had a sugar daddy that paid me a monthly allowance of $4,000 a month. And when he went through a divorce, he couldn't provide that for me anymore. And I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? So I told my best friend, and I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And my friend, she was going out of town to work at a bar called The Green Door every month for 1 week. And she decided to confide in me, and she said, that Green Door bar doesn't exist, girl. I go up to San Francisco once a month and work as an escort, and that's what you should do. You are not a $4,000 a month girl. You are a pay by the hour girl. You can make that in one day. And I was like, are you serious? Is this safe? And so anyways, that's how I got into being a professional escort, because she introduced me to this whole new world. And I mean, I was spending multiple days a week with my sugar daddy for $4,000 a month, but yeah, I do make $4,000 a day sometimes now.
Were you conflicted about it, or was this kind of like, man, this is an easy decision?
I was so scared. And she was like, well, why don't you just come on one of my trips with me? And I was like, yeah, okay, I guess that's fair. And she had me post an ad, but when you first start as a sex worker, especially as a escort, it's very hard for you to get booked if you don't have establishment, like if you're not established, like social media, ads, different website verification services. So it was very slow for me that week, but she introduced the idea of doing what's called doubles, which means threesomes. So I would see her with a client, and we would do it that way. And that's how I got established.
What was that first time kind of like for you?
I was so uncomfortable with it, because it's like, you don't get to pick who your clients are, you know, like you do a rigorous screening process and make sure that they're safe to see. but you don't know what they look like. And that was something that I was like, well, how can I do this if I'm not attracted to them? And she kind of, this provider, she like told me that I had to get into a role. So it was like acting. And it is, some of it is, or a lot of it was when I first started. And so I would have to get into this role. And that was really hard for me because I was like, when I was seeing my sugar daddy, it was like we were dating, you know, and I was attracted to him. And we like actually had a real connection. So this was different because it was like very transactional and like I may not ever see that person again. And it's like an exchange. And it just felt like sleazy and unsafe and scary. But after a couple of weeks of that, and like, and then when I was making $10,000 in 1 week to start, I was like, I'm doing this. Like, it does not matter. And then I was able to get into character real quick. Like, in my day-to-day life, I'm a different person from when I am Madison Montgomery.
Do you still feel kind of conflicted about it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Oh my gosh. Most of my friends know that I'm a sex worker. My family, I think that they know, but it's like a don't ask questions you don't want to know the answer to kind of thing, you know? Because they know that I've done modeling my whole adult life and Playboy, but I think they know. I think they just, we're not going to talk about it.
What do you think that made you okay with it? Was it just, was it the money, or is it just like, I just got used to this?
Well, definitely the money. The money has been insane. But when I say that I started as mostly acting, it was, I mean, entirely it had to be an act for me because I couldn't get into it. But now I don't feel like it's that much acting. It's like I'm giving a person an experience that like is changing their life. So I don't know. I feel like I'm a giver, and a lot of the time I'm a therapist because I get to talk people through their issues on what's going on in their lives. And I'm really good at that. I'm a Pisces. I'm an empath, I would say. And most of my encounters are equally rewarding, like other than monetarily.
How does an encounter usually work, right? Is it kind of a date, or is this like everybody knows what they're here for? Let's get to the getting.
Well, it depends. Typically, someone contacts me via an ad that they've seen, or I post on Twitter a lot about my availability. They text or email me, then I send them to my screening form. They have to go through a screening process where I verify they are who they say they are. They have to provide their name, age, email, phone number. I screen that with a various number of sites, which I will not say which ones they are because the men are not supposed to know about them. And then if anything comes up on there that's a red flag to me, then I typically don't see them. But if they're all good to go and their references check out, most of us require provider references. So they'll provide to other providers information, and I will reach out to them, ask if they're safe, if they would see them again, that kind of stuff. And so, yeah. So if they pass the screening process, then it just depends. Like sometimes a guy wants to meet with me for an hour. That's my minimum time. And usually an hour is just, I either go to them or they come to me, and it's pretty like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's like a little bit of conversation, and then I get right into it. But then what I prefer is like a preferred for me, but obviously it's more expensive, is like a dinner date where we go enjoy a meal and some drinks together in public, and then we go back to my place or my hotel or their place, and then it's more organic feeling because it's like it feels like an actual date.
So, as you know, I think it's listed officially as like a travel companion. Now, will people kind of fly you out specifically, or how does that work? Yes.
So, FMTY or Fly Me to You is a thing that most escorts offer, and that's the travel companion aspect of it. So, yes, that is definitely like top tier, way more expensive because we require much more of a deposit. We require flights to be covered, and most girls ask for first class, but I'm like, I don't ask for first class. I'm like, I think that the concept of first class is ridiculous. If they want to do that for me, hell yeah. But like, that's not something I require, because I like to book my own flights. But, yeah, they pay for everything that is required for the travel, for the travel time, and then my rate, which is $6,500 for 24 hours. So,
how is that like kind of compared to other people who are in the industry? Is that pretty standard? Is that high? Is that lower?
Everyone has their own thing. My hourly rate is $1,000, so it's like, you're getting a really great deal if you want to spend that much time with me, you know. And then my overnight, if I'm just like coming for the night, is $5,500. So how do I compare to the other girls in the industry? Most girls are charging like $8,000 for 24 hours.
So then like how much would you say that you make a year?
Around $300,000.
That's a lot of money. That's like life-changing money.
That includes other things as well. So travel companion escort Madison Montgomery is also dominatrix mistress Madison Hill, which I used to separate the two, but now that I've been face out, meaning I show my face in all my advertisements and not blurred, I just, you know, people are going to notice. So I just combine the two. Most people know that I'm the same person, but I do switch between different roles. So that's with both of those, which come at a different price point. And I also started doing full body sensual massage this year, which is at a different price point as well, which is more busy. So I would say Madison Montgomery, the travel companion escort, is more of like the luxury service, and is I get less bookings that way, but I prefer longer bookings. So I would say I get like one or two a week with that, and then with the others it's way more consistent.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have another job outside of this. This is kind of,
I own my own business in the cosmetic world, med spa wise.
Is that kind of the retirement plan, so to speak, or was that just something that you've always done?
Yeah, that was kind of the retirement plan. I actually announced that I retired this year when I was in a relationship, and that was going to be the rest of my life as a med spa owner, but that didn't work out. So I'm back to the sex work, which is honestly the best.
Do you really enjoy it, or have you kind of like in any way convinced yourself that you enjoy it?
Okay. So when I retired this year, it was only for a short time. I was so happy to be done with it because it is really taxing. Like, I have to be on top of my shit all the time. I have to make sure that I look good all the time because, you know, unless you only allow yourself a number of days or a set schedule to take appointments, which is like doing yourself a disservice because some months are very busy and some months are very slow. And on those slow months, you have to like just be ready in case you get something. But So yeah, I have to take excellent care of myself. I have to, like, especially the touring. And in my opinion, to be successful in this, you have to tour. You cannot only work in your home city, because the people who live there are going to see you on the advertisements, and men like variety, and they're gonna get, they, if they've already seen you, they're gonna get bored, you know, or they'll want to see more people. So when I go on tour is when I make the most amount of money. I make consistently 10,000 in 1 week, like, or sometimes 10,000 in 2 days. That's because when I come to these different cities that I don't live in, these guys are like, oh my God, I have to see her this time, because I might not get another chance for like another year, you know? So they hop on it, and then I'm slam packed with appointments for the time that I'm there. I enjoy it because I have the flexibility of my own schedule. I can afford this freaking amazing apartment that I otherwise probably wouldn't. I love that it gives me the lifestyle that I want. The things that I don't like about it, obviously, are that it's stigmatized. It's considered not legal, although, and you'll hear any provider say this, the donation is for my time and companionship only, which is true. Anything that is decided between two consenting adults is irrelevant to the donation. And it's hard on my body, you know. I'm way more active than the average person.
When we talk about the sexual aspect of it, mm-hmm. is it kind of everything on the table, whole thing, or what are we kind of talking about in that regard?
I have some limits. I prefer it to be more sensual and like vanilla, I guess you could say, but I do offer trips to Greece, which is anal, for $1,000 extra. But I don't allow like marks that would last past the appointment, such as like whipping or like really hard spanking or anything that would leave a bruise, which sometimes, unfortunately, that does happen, but I bruise easily, so I just don't like the rough play on me. So that's a limit. I don't allow cum in my mouth. I can't, like, I am not a porn star, and although I have OnlyFans, I can't. It's just like, ugh. That's where I have to draw the line. So, but everyone's different. Some girls do swallow. I spit.
Why do they call it trips to Greece? I've never heard that before. Why is it called that?
It's called Greek. You can't like say anal on any advertisement. You can't even say Greek on some, but like, that's the term. I don't know why it's called that. I have no idea where that came from.
That doesn't really make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. So like when you talk about like the people that you're involved with, I'm assuming they're generally men.
Yes. Although I see couples as well. I don't see just females though. It's too weird for me. Like I am... in my personal life, I would say I'm heteroflexible. I have been in like thruples, and I have dated girls, but like it was kind of a phase for me. I'm not fully bisexual, so I can't see women one-on-one. It's totally like out of my wheelhouse. So I see couples though, and that has been enjoyable.
What are, if you kind of like were to put them in a certain category or to stereotype them in a way, like what would you say, like what's the men, like is there a general age range, general type, like how would you kind of characterize most of them?
Now that I've been in the business for a while and I'm very established, I'd say most of my clientele is between 35 and 65. But when I first started, it was a lot of younger guys, which it's kind of like stereotypical, like that they are the most annoying. Like they don't follow instructions. They don't do their research well enough. And there are exceptions, but typically I don't like to see anyone younger than me. It just feels weird. Sometimes I will. Sometimes there are respectable younger gents that want to see me. But I weed it out, you know, like when they contact me, I can tell who's serious and who's mature and who's not. And I can choose that way. But what kind of... They're definitely like white collar, most of the guys that see me, just because of the price point. And when I said before that I do domination and FBSM, full body sensual massage, those are typically blue collar type men, because it is a lot less. But I'm also not taking my clothes off. I'm not engaging in sexual activities.
The full body sensual massage, like, well, I don't know what that is. Well, I mean, like, I know obviously like what that is. I understand what those words mean, but I don't know what that, the thing that it's not a rub and tug. Like, that's what I used to, that's what I've always,
that is, that actually is it. Yeah. So,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like massage happy ending. And I do that in a spa space, like an actual office. That's a spa. With that, it's just topless, and they can pay extra if they want other services, even into the GFE range of services if they would like, but it's a massage office space. It's discreet, but it's not like private enough. It's like as private as being in your own hotel room or in my home or in theirs, you know.
I have a good friend that I went to high school with, and that was his thing. He would call them rub and tugs, and he would pay $25. And I always thought that, I never knew if that was, is that cheap or expensive?
That's cheap. That's insane. Maybe that was a long time ago, but my hourly for that is $400.
That seems like a lot.
And I actually do deep tissue massage. So most
actually get a massage too. It's not just like
giving them a full body massage, and that's hard work, like, you know. So, but then I'm also in lingerie, and
it's a whole thing
at the end of the last 5 minutes. So,
yeah, I would imagine by the time you get to the end, it doesn't take very long.
It doesn't. It's quick.
Like second? Are we talking seconds or at least minutes?
It's mostly 5 minutes.
That's all right. Like, I feel like, okay, that's not bad, guys. Are you ready for some harder / listener submitted questions?
Harder? Yeah.
Can you have a normal life? Do you feel like you can have a normal life with this kind of job?
Totally. I do have a normal life. I travel a lot. Sometimes I'll combine my personal travel with tours. I just did that in Miami. I was there for a whole week, and I went to a music festival, which is my number one hobby. I'm a huge raver. I've been a raver for 15 years. And all that covered, and I had the best time of my life because I can spend money freely and come home with money, like, still. So I would say that the hardest part of normal life is dating. Like, you know, in my last relationship that didn't work out, like, I really thought he was my soulmate. He knew everything about me being a sex worker. And initially he accepted it, but then he used it against me later, even after I had retired. So it's like, I get it. Like, I don't think that if I was a man, I don't think that I would date a sex worker. But then it's like hard because I deserve love, you know? Like, so eventually, I don't know. Like, that's the question I get a lot, is like, what's your end game? Because you do want to be in a relationship. But at this stage of my life, after that one, I don't want to retire anytime soon. So dating is just not on my priority list. Like, and all of my friends love me for who I am. So, and they're supportive of it. And some of them who were before knowing that I am one or before knowing me were part of that societal stigma that hates on sex work. They have like a new changed mindset on it, which is really nice because they see that I'm still like a normal person.
This one's kind of interesting in the sense that like, has this heightened or ruined your sex drive?
I have always been like a little freak. Like even since I was a teenager, like it's not shocking, you know, like looking at my childhood growing up and how like risque I was. Has it heightened it? I would say yeah, because like I am way more experienced than the average person my age, and I even was one like 5 years ago at 25. So I'm still horny, and I actually like do enjoy, and I get off for most of my appointments. Like I'm not faking that part I mean, I have to with some, but like I'm good at it.
Do they want you to? Do they want you to like fake it if you're not?
Oh, they don't want me to fake it. I mean, they're going to be heartbroken to know some of them that I've been faking it, but they want me to get off for sure. It's not just all about them. Like a lot of them want to please me too.
Oh, I think this person is asking, this is kind of like, cause we had an adult film star that was on one time. And the question was kind of similar in the sense, and they asked him like, do you feel like you're actually good at sex? And the lady was like, no, not really. She was an adult film star about it. She's like, I don't really think that I am. So the question would be like, do you feel like you're good at it?
I'm great at it. Like, and when I go back to like my dating life, they're astounded by my skills. Like they're like, what? Like this girl is like way exceeding my expectations, which maybe I should have been like a little bit more like, I don't usually do this, you know, but then they don't believe that either. So,
right. You know? What are you doing? Like what's.
I have so much more experience that I've perfected the skills, you know, like.
What is your most interesting request? Actually, it's a two-part question. What is your most common request? What is your most interesting request?
It's pretty like all the same. Like they want me to do oral and then they want all the positions. Sometimes they want me to wear something specific. Like a lot of guys like the secretary business look because they want it to be kind of like a role play situation, which is fine. I take outfit requests. Most people do, except for if I'm touring, then it can't be too specific. But obviously I'm traveling and I don't have my full wardrobe. But I don't know what my most common request is. I guess I sometimes get requested for doubles, and I've known to do doubles with other girls in the industry. Doubles means the threesome thing again. So that's a request. Again, that comes at a really high price point because it's double the rate, you know? So not a lot of people can afford that, and that's why it's like, I don't get many of those. It's like a once in a while thing, but those are requests I get.
What would you say is probably your most interesting? What would you say is kind of your most interesting or unique one?
Dressing up in cosplay, I guess, because of my hair color and my body is like very hourglass, and I have huge tits and a huge ass that I look like a comic book character, so a lot of them want me to dress in cosplay. That's my most interesting one, I guess, and I love doing that. I love being cartoon characters like Jessica Rabbit. I get called that all the time. They want me to like reenact scenes from Jessica Rabbit, Roger Rabbit movies. And then Poison Ivy, I've done a ton. Jean Grey. So as an escort, I'm a GFE escort, girlfriend experience. And that is typically like, you're hiring me to be your part-time girlfriend. So I'm going to do what a girlfriend would do for the amount of time that I'm spending with you. And another type of escort is called PSE. It's porn star experience. And I get that request a lot, but I am not a porn star. Like, I do have OnlyFans and I make content with a couple different guys. Like porn content, but I'm not a porn star. I'm not doing like all the crazy shit that you see in porn. And so that's a request that I deny, because typically there are no limits and guys just want to like face fuck me for a whole hour. And I'm not cool with that. Like, no. You know, like that's not me.
Do you have to pay taxes?
Yes, I do.
But do you pay taxes on this? Like, how do you?
Most high-end establishment riders require deposits. I have for the last, I didn't for like the first 2 years. So I have for the last 5 to 6 years now. And that is sent electronically most of the time. So Cash App, Zelle, some people accept Venmo. I don't have Venmo anymore. PayPal, you know, all that. I pay taxes on that. And then whatever I put into the bank, I have to, because it's coming from somewhere and I don't want to be audited.
What do you put down as the occupation then?
Self-employed, and I do own a business. So
that's really the only issue that I would have with it. It's like, look, I'm paying taxes. You got to pay taxes too. As long as you're paying taxes.
I am paying taxes. And I live in California and the taxes are very high, but I love living here.
Is it dangerous? Like, do you worry about your safety at all?
I definitely did when I first started. I was like, how can this be safe? How can I assure that the people who are contacting me are not law enforcement? And that was... That stressor was alleviated by the screening process. I screen every single person that I see, and they have to provide me a lot of information. So if they're not willing to do that, I will not see them. If their information doesn't check out, I will not see them. And then the thing with the law enforcement is, I figured out a cop will not send you money prior to meeting you, so they can't provide a deposit. Now, I have actually seen law enforcement that do provide me their information. They're just doing it on the side, and they are very upfront about their occupation. And yeah, I have seen a few cops.
It is. Do you feel, from a legal standpoint, do you feel like this is something that law enforcement is actively going after? Like, do you
feel
like
right now? No, I don't. I would say they, it's more cause for concern, and people get in trouble when it's like someone has gotten involved with an escort who's currently going through a divorce, and they get proof of it, and then, you know, they find that there's this sort of affair happening, and then again, with all those review sites, like, it's that information can be used against you.
Have you ever had any famous clients?
I have. I can't name them.
On a scale of 1 to 10, like, how famous do you think we're talking?
10 for a few.
Actor? Athlete? Can you give us the industry?
Actor / TV personality and a couple athletes.
Is that pretty common?
No.
Did you know who they, well, I guess through the verification you found out. Yeah. What was your reaction when you were like, oh, that person's famous?
Well, I had to do even more screening because sometimes I'll get screening forms from people who say that they're somebody, but they're not, and they're just lying. So it's like, there's no way this person is contacting me. And like, out of the zillion options that there are, like, I know I'm hot, but like, there's hotter ones, like, you know. And I would say that the Las Vegas escorts get way more of that, because there's a whole different market over there. But yeah, I've had a few, but it's very rare, very rare. And you have to sign a bunch of like NDAs and all that. I did, so.
What is your busiest month? What is your slowest month?
Man, it varies, but the last 2 months have been amazing for me. October and September were killer. Like, it was like when I announced on Twitter, which I have 30,000 followers there, and that's where I interact with my fans, I guess, the most, and then on OnlyFans as well. When I announced that I was retiring, people were like shattered. Like, they were like, no, like, I've been saving up for this amount of time to see you, and like, I'll never get to see you. You know, people were really like upset, but then they were really happy for me because I was in love at the time. So then when I announced that that relationship didn't work out and I was back in the game, I think people were like, oh no, wait, we better get after it, like, before this happens again, you know, in case she does retire again. So I don't know if it's because of that or it's because of, I don't know, just like my increasing popularity on social media or what, but the last 2 months were amazing. I will say that the worst months typically are the holiday months, November and December. So we're into November now, and yep, I have been noticing that it is crickets. Like, I have not been busy with the GFE stuff this month. The FBSM and domination stuff is more consistent, but yeah, I'm getting a lull.
That's pretty much all the questions we have. Is there anything that you think that we missed, or how can people kind of get a hold of you if they are interested in learning more?
MissMadisonMontgomery.com is my website, and that has all of my social links on it. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, or Twitter X. People are calling it now. I always say Twitter because I've been on there since 2016. But TikTok, X, Instagram, my website, and then on my website are all of my verification platforms, which I'm not going to say on here, but you can find it there.
I want to thank Madison so much for coming on the show. If you want to connect with her, we have linked to her on our social media accounts. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included her information in the episode description. The YouTube version of this interview will be live on November 9th at 4:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. If you were to go into the male escort lifestyle, how much do you think you could charge someone for an hour of your time?
Can you, what is like a, do you know what an average rate is? Why would you know what that is?
Okay, so $1,000 would be like pretty high class.
See, I think I could get up to maybe 500, but only if I had like a shtick, like, I don't know, chubby cheeks or chubby chaser or something, or like, you know.
You would have like a marketing gimmick, and you think you could get like 500 an hour?
Yeah, like, you know, like, let's wrestle, like, let's stage a professional wrestling match or something.
Oh, like taking you want to hit the mat with chubby cheeks.
Yeah, there you go. See, yeah,
there you.
You know, over.
I'd be happy if I got $100 an hour.
I mean, listen, if I'm not doing a gimmick, I mean, I'd be lucky to even get a client. I think.
Think of how many male gigolos there are out there with no clients.
There's When do you decide to hang it up? That's my question. Like, when do you decide that, like, this is probably not what I should be doing with my life?
Probably pretty quickly. I think that if you're like a male escort and you don't have any clients in the first month, I don't think it's going to happen for you.
Yeah, I tell you this, that lifestyle is not one that I ever want to partake in. I think I would be absolutely terrified of it.
Terrified of being a male escort?
Yeah, I know it sounds. I know it sounds great, and I know, and maybe it is great. I have no idea, but just going from different person to different person every night, to never knowing the situation, really. I don't know. It's too much of a control freak for that.
Too much anxiety to be a male escort.
I mean, like, sit me down in a room where I have to talk. Maybe I make $100 an hour. You put me up in a room naked against five other guys, I'm probably walking out with nothing. Probably naked. I probably have to pay them just to be there.
Hey, man, I'm in the same boat. I'm not getting any money off of it either.
I mean, at least you're, you know, you can market yourself one way. I mean, there is a market for little, you know, shorter men, I'm sure.
See, but even there, I'm splitting the difference. Like, I'm just slightly, I'm like at the low end of average. Like, nobody's like, do you want somebody who's at the low end of average? Like, no, he's either got to be tall or little, and you're just kind of right there. Like, I've got no marketing.
All right, last question on this. Do you remember the show Cat House on HBO?
Nope.
All right, like he said, let's go to shout-outs here. Tiago Torres, Joe Hookie, Christian Albrecht, Trey Halo, Joe Collins, Ryan Motley. That's a cool last name. Motley is always a good name. Jared Rahal, Jose Aponte, Tori Field, and Monica Cortez.
I think the worst last name anybody could possibly have is Farts.
Farts? Like, just Farts?
Like, Farts. Could you imagine growing up with the last name Farts?
I've never known anyone to have that last name. I did know somebody that had the last name of Booger.
That's still not as bad as Farts, though.
Yeah, Farts is pretty bad.
Farts would be the worst last name that you could possibly have. I can't think of a single worse last name than Farts.
I mean, has there been anyone in the history of the world with the last name of Farts? There has to have been.
There are over 2,000 census records available for somebody with the last name Fart.
Jesus, that's a lot.
You would have to change that so fast. Oh my God, there's a whole group. There's Anna Fart, Bob Fart, Elizabeth Fart, George Fart, Henry Fart, James Fart, John Fart. You would have to change that. You could not have the last name Farts.
And is it spelled like F-A-R-T? Like, it's not like...
F-A-R-T. Man, there's a lot of... Like, all the jokes would be endless. You would be made fun of for your last name of Farts every single interaction with another person.
And I'm sure that never would get old. Kind of like in the male escort business. All you need, 30 seconds.
That would be my marketing technique. That would be my ad, though. It would be like Nick Van Zandt doesn't charge by the hour because all it's going to take is 30 seconds.
Just one flat fee for the whole time?
Right. It'd be like $10. Well, you know, that $10, that's pretty cheap. Well, it's only going to last 30 seconds. I would market myself based on like, it would be like a drive-through. I would market myself on speed rather than ability.
Yeah, but I mean, really
get them in and out.
Realistically,
in and out, like Jiffy Lube.
Yeah, but if you're only doing $10 a pop, realistically, you're only going to be able to do it 6 to 7 times in an hour.
You could do it 6 to 7 times in an hour? I thought you were going to say a month. There's no way I could do it 6 to 7 times in an hour.
Sure, you could. I mean, you're.
Oh, I guess if it's I'm not doing it, maybe I get them.
Never mind. This is spiraling out of control. All right, yeah, let's go to some other things that make no sense. A couple of questions for you. Christmas music, is it okay to play before Thanksgiving?
No, it is not okay to put Christmas. It is not okay to have Christmas music before Thanksgiving. It is not okay to put Christmas decorations up inside your house before Thanksgiving. But I think that you can put your Christmas lights up as early as right now. Outdoor decorations are acceptable. Christmas lights can go up now. Christmas decorations can't go up until after Thanksgiving. In like we're talking about like candy canes out in the front yard, that kind of stuff. But lights can go up now. Everything else has to wait for after Thanksgiving.
So what do you do if you walk into somebody's house right now and they have it's all decorated for Christmas?
Well, I mean, nothing. It's somebody like, what am I going to do? Like, punch him in the face? Fucking tear it down?
Yeah, like, that's I just feel like
an adult. Yeah,
sure you would.
Like, you're going to get enraged?
Sure, yes. Like, yes, I think.
Stab him with a knife?
Well,
like,
I didn't go.
I would criticize it. I'd be like, that's too early.
I mean, I was hoping not murder, but it's fine. All right. Once again, I don't know how these things always match up, but one of the questions I had for you is actually kind of what we were talking about. And it's... How much would it take for you to do some kind of show or something nude in front of an audience?
Do I have any time to prepare? Can I like prepare the body and slim it down? No. Or am I just have to go out there right now?
Just have to go out there right now. Say it's tonight.
Oh, it's going to have to change my life. I'm going to have to get life-changing money or life-changing, like, exposure or something like that. Like, it's going to have to be life-changing. I'm not doing it for, like, $100. I'm not doing it for $10,000. It's going to have to be life-changing for me to be naked in public.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. I don't think it would...
How much would you do it for?
I mean, listen, you have a much nicer physique than me, and I think I would do it for relatively cheap. I mean, I'd do it for 5 digits.
You do it for 5 digits? See, the thing is, too, is my advantage is that because I am a thinner man, mine will appear bigger.
Well, right? I didn't say that it had to be something sexual. Maybe they want you.
You're still going to be out there with your wiener just hanging around.
Oh, I mean, I don't. Aren't we at the age in our life where who even cares anymore if it's what the size is? As long as it still works.
It's not that I care. It's that I care what I personally don't like, what I look like. That's why I don't have the confidence right now. It would have to be life changing money.
Okay. Well, if anyone's looking for somebody to do something nude and has life changing money, Nick's waiting for your call.
I'm your guy.
Just don't have it be cold outside or inside. I don't know why I was thinking about this. But would you rather lose your life savings in a robbery or going to the casino and blowing it on black?
Ooh, I think I would rather be robbed because at that point I could at least blame it on somebody else and I could potentially get it back. If you go to the casino, you've got nobody else to blame but you, and you made a bad decision and you're not getting that back.
Yeah.
So I would rather be robbed.
I mean, I dabble a little bit in DraftKings and things and in the casino, and it's like when you lose $10 in two hands – you just feel shitty. I couldn't imagine losing serious money.
I've never been a gambler. I have never really, like, I'll like to go to Vegas and I like to kind of like gamble to hang out with my friends, but I have never enjoyed gambling. Never. I wouldn't bet a dollar. Like, that's, ooh, I just lost that dollar.
I can speak from experience that you are one instigating SOB.
Oh, yeah. I like watching other people lose money.
A lot of money. Hundreds of dollars I've seen.
Lose it. $150. Yeah, I'm double it. Double down. Sorry, Ryan.
I just want my room.
You lost all your money.
You want my room comped. Yeah, well, you got that, went home empty-handed. So, anyway.
No, he didn't even get his room comped. Just to put people on this story, we have a friend, a mutual friend, John and I, who gambled away pretty much all of his winnings because of us, and then he just managed to scream out, I want my room comped over and over because he was so drunk. Those were the only words that he could form in the English language, and he didn't get his room comped, and he lost like $1,600 in the span of a minute.
Anyways, that's really all I had today. That was it.
Oh, wow.
You went through it pretty quick there.
Okay, so our top five is top five cold weather foods. What's your number five?
It's a combo, but it's a delicious combo, and that's tomato soup and grilled cheese.
I don't understand the cold weather appeal of that.
It's soup, and it's a hot sandwich.
I mean, I think grilled cheese is good all year round. I don't personally see tomato soup and maybe I don't personally see grilled cheese as a cold weather meal, to be honest with you. It's just
All right.
It's just, I mean, it's not any different than a cheeseburger. You wouldn't say a cheeseburger is a cold weather meal.
No, but it's, you know, listen, it's all presumption, right? I presume that that's a combo in the winter that I only eat during the winter.
Which is ironic because tomatoes aren't good in the winter.
Well,
so you're eating it at the wrong time, right? You're not eating fresh. You're eating some. Anyway, I can go on this. My number five is chicken noodle soup. Warm, makes you feel better. Chicken noodle soup, I think, is a good cold weather food.
See, and to me, that's all year round soup.
That's because you're sick all the time and you live in Detroit.
Well,
and it sucks.
I honestly have nothing for that.
how am I going to respond?
I got nothing. Detroit doesn't suck, but it doesn't matter.
You're not going to eat. You're going to eat chicken noodle soup in July.
Yeah, I did actually. I did just this past July because I got sick.
Yeah, but if you're not sick, you're not eating chicken noodle soup.
No, but why else would you eat chicken noodle soup? I think chicken noodle soup is probably one of the most overrated soups in the history of soups.
I would say tomato soup to me is one of the most overrated soups, but I don't disagree with it. I'm not going to say that I like chicken noodle soup particularly. It's okay. I think of it as a cold weather food. What's your number four?
So like a pot pie, like a chicken pot pie.
Yeah. Chicken pot pie is the kind of thing that you have in cold weather.
Oh, it's.
I agree.
And pro tip, make your own. Like you can buy the frozen ones, but make your own and it's even better. It's not hard to make either. It's very easy.
Chicken pot pie?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like a lot of work. That looks like a lot of work, to be honest with you.
It's not really. Once.
Oh, is it much easier when you got 15 kinds of tongs at your house? How many tongs you got now?
Why? Just why with the tongs?
Why would you have more than one tong? I will never understand this.
You know what? I just bought baking tongs, so you're welcome.
So how many pairs of tongs do you have now? How are the baking tongs different from the how many other pairs of tongs did you have?
Baking tongs have a little bit more of a round edge on the end. So you can pick up things, you know, in cupcake pans and other bakery items. That way you don't have to, like, use a knife or toothpick to kind of round them out. You can just get the tongs in there and lift them out nice and gently.
So how many pairs of tongs do you have?
I don't know. Probably, like I said, probably between 15 and 20 maybe.
And you really, between 15 and 20 tongs, you said to yourself, of all of these tongs, I just don't have the right tongs to get this cupcake out. I need something else.
I mean, listen, there are several kinds of tongs for several different things.
Yeah, there's lots of kind of forks. They're all a fork.
Yeah, you're the one arguing this. I'm not.
I'm the one arguing that you don't need anything. Like, right? I don't think it's the tong. I think it's the person operating the tongs.
I mean,
maybe you need to work on some manual dexterity, get your coordination up so that you can use tongs properly and you don't need the exact specific thing, right?
I mean, listen, let me live my life.
I'm just saying you should be able to use a hammer for more than one thing than just hitting nails.
Here's the thing. Right? All right, get you a pair of bread tongs and it'll change your life.
You have bread tongs to, like, reach into a sandwich bag, to a bag of bread that you get from the supermarket to pull out the piece of bread?
No, I have bread tongs for the toaster so I don't have to stick my finger in there and get burned.
Do it like a man. Push the thing down and then pop it out fast enough so it shoots out of there and then grab it. Reach in there.
No, that's why I'll buy a 99-cent pair of bamboo bread tongs.
I can't believe that, right? Like, if I saw somebody that was next to a toaster who was like, oh, I can't get it, and then turned around and walked across the kitchen, got a pair of tongs, and then came back and then got it out, you're going to get made fun of in my house. I'll tell you that much.
Okay. All right.
Somebody's going to laugh at you.
Sure.
My number four is casseroles. Any kind of casserole. I think casserole is a great cold weather food. Any kind of casseroles.
It is. It's.
I'm going to throw.
It is.
I'll throw goulash on there as well. I'll throw goulash. I consider goulash to be a casserole in my mind.
It is, I think. Yeah, I mean, anything like that is delicious. Once again, I kind of have those all year round, but I could see how they could be labeled as a cold weather food.
Okay. It's your number three?
My number three is actually not food, but it kind of is food.
Are you going to say what I'm thinking? Is your three about to be what my number three is?
No, I don't think so. Because okay. I don't think you partake in number three. But saying that, my number three is any kind of dark beer, like a stout or something like that. Something heavy, something that you drink primarily in the wintertime.
Okay. I can see a darker beer being a winter drink. My number three is hot chocolate.
Okay. That's, yeah, that's a good one. I was thinking about putting that on my list, but I don't know. I'm just not a big fan of hot chocolate.
I'm not really a big fan of a whole hot chocolate. Hot chocolate to me is one of those things that you can have about half of it, and then you're like, okay, that's enough of that. I don't know. I never really want a full glass of hot chocolate. Half is good.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And not even like half of what it would be. However much you give me, I want half of that.
I mean, you're going to tell me to you know, go all the way in. Drink all the hot chocolate there, all right? Come on.
I don't like it. It doesn't taste that good after a little while.
makes my mouth burn.
Oh, you got tongs for the hot... Do you have special tongs to get the marshmallows out of the hot chocolate?
I mean...
Do you have special hot marshmallow tongs?
I mean, I do have marshmallow tongs, yes.
Do you really have marshmallow tongs?
Yeah, they stick together sometimes, the marshmallows, when they get a little old. So you gotta have some little tongs for them.
You can't use your hands?
Yeah, sure.
That's what I mean. The tong is more of a pain in the ass to go get a pair of tongs and to separate them.
Listen, don't question the man, all right? It's fine.
Nothing. Just waste your money on stupid shit. Go ahead for it.
My number two is any kind of like pot roast, something like that. Okay. You know, like I don't want to say turkey, but think of like a Thanksgiving meal, like a pot roast with some stuffing or something like that. But I'll just say pot roast just for the sake of it.
Is a pot roast a stew? Does that count as a stew?
No, I don't think so, because I usually make my pot roast like as the meat. There's not a lot of, it's not in a stew usually. You can put it in a stew, but no.
Mm. Do you make them in a pot?
Sometimes I try to smoke it, which is even worse because it gets all dried out, which is sometimes can be delicious, but it's a very delicate meat.
Mm, okay, sure. Chicken and dumplings.
When's the last time you had dumplings?
Oh, it's probably been like 10 years.
Yeah, no, that's not something that people just make, I feel, on the regular, is dumplings.
I love chicken dumplings, though. It's fantastic. I want some now.
Well, it is
That's winter. Like a food that you haven't eaten in a long time, and then you bring it back, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to eat that all the time. I want chicken and dumplings. Okay, what's your... I think our number one's going to be the same.
Yeah, I think so, too. Does it start with a C?
It does.
Yeah, it's... Yep, definitely. Cumin powder.
Cumin. I was going to put, chili is obviously
my number one's a cheese stick.
Is it really a cheese stick?
No, man, of course it's chili. Of course it's chili.
Chili's fucking amazing. Chili is the ultimate cold weather food, I think, right?
Yeah, it's because it's hearty. There's several ways you can make it. It's 100% customizable. Chili may actually be one of the top 30 foods ever.
I would agree with that. Yeah, I could go top 15. I could go a little bit higher.
I
could put chili into the top.
I'm going to keep it in my 30.
I could put chili in the top 15 of all my foods, because I'm thinking like pizza, hamburger, cheeseburger. I do like some chili, man. I like some chili. What do you have? What do you have in your honorable mention?
So I have hot chocolate. I have apple cider. Hot apple cider is delicious. What? You're insane. Speaking of apple, like apple pie, like some kind of like pumpkin pie, like a, you know, fall pies, those are always delicious as well.
Okay.
And that's kind of, I did have stew on here, but I don't like I beef stew, I guess.
Yeah, I have stews in general that are on there. But in my mind, a stew is a lot like a casserole. I know those are completely different things, but it's kind of like the thing where you put a whole bunch of shit together. The other thing that I have on there is cranberries. Because you can get like you get cranberries at Thanksgiving. You can get some cranberry pie. Like, cranberry makes a resurgence, I feel like, in the winter months.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, we all drink cranberry juice, I feel like, in the summertime. But actual cranberries are probably eaten in the fall.
Pies. I would say pie is more of a winter dessert. Pie is a winter dessert. You're not eating a lot of pies in the summer.
Oh, it depends.
Okay, that's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. Doesn't have to be some big thing, just a couple of quick words. It really helps us out. It really supports the show. We really appreciate it. And let us know what you think are some of the best cold weather foods. I think it's really hard to beat chili. Like, chili is the quintessential cold weather foods. But if you have any other things that you're really like, man, this is it, let us know.